And here we go, Gary, in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Gary and Kenny Show. I'm Gary Kroger in Waterloo, Iowa, and I am joined by
Ken Seisler in beautiful downtown Calabasas.
There's always a pause before. You don't just come in with Ken Seisler from Calabasas.
Nope, brain is operating. I never know what it's going to do.
I am
the last person to know what I'm about to say.
Is this more and more true as you get older? Is this a little bit of early senility? I mean, have you always been this way?
Well, if I can remember, I don't think I can remember.
I get credit for the setup.
Okay. All right.
You know, I'm excited about our guest today, and mm-hmm. we should probably point out Mark Pellington, producer, writer, director.
What are the movies he's made? He's made some big movies that people
Well, he's made Mothman Prophecies is one of those, mm-hmm. and it's a film that I enjoy very much.
Yeah.
But he's also done a lot of
Arlington movies. Road. He did Arlington Road. Jeff Bridges.
Right? Yeah. But he did Pearl Jam music videos. I mean, he's mm-hmm. this guy's a real.
And he was actually in the movie Jerry Maguire.
He was in the movie Jerry Maguire and Almost Famous.
And the reason I wanted to have him on because I wanted to talk to a filmmaker with all of the movies coming out and get some of the filmmaker's thoughts on the movies that are out there, and as we go into the Academy Awards and the nominations and the world and movies right now, because
mention to those watching, because maybe the audio version of this it won't matter, but those watching, they're going to notice that I change. Because we had an ice storm here and we lost all of our internet for a period. So I had to go onto my cell phone. So I think my introduction to Mark and a little bit of talking is on my cell phone, probably lousy sound. I don't know. But then it all came on again. And here I am.
Right. In our interview, as people will see, you are vertical.
I'm vertical. So don't worry about fancy editing to get rid of all that. It is what it is. It's live podcasting.
Yeah.
And so there, that's my disclaimer. But so it was a really enjoyable interview.
What movies have you seen? What would you be your pick for the Academy Award?
That's tough. I don't know which one that I would pick. That's a terrible answer.
I don't know.
I don't have a bead on any one of them. The Fablemans, maybe, because it's so.
Well, I find it hard putting those old movies in the same category as Avatar,
or Top Gun. Maverick.
Yeah, Top Gun. It's very hard for me to compare. Or what was it? The Banshees of Inisherin. Did you see that?
No, I haven't.
I just don't understand why they're called the Banshees.
I don't know, and
do you know what a Banshee is?
Out of ignorance.
Do you know what a Banshee is?
I'm hoping you're going to explain more.
No, I think as I'm, you can tap dance while I Google Banshees, and maybe our audience wants to know what Banshees are.
Well, I'll tap dance a little bit because, I don't think Maverick is necessarily going to win, but there's a romance going on with Maverick in the industry, and I think it'll get a lot of votes simply for the fact that we were all down in the dumps. Nobody was going into the theaters post-COVID. Like the industry was dying. Maverick comes out and super whammy. It got people excited again.
I went.
Theaters back. I did.
I thought it was entertaining.
I've seen it twice.
Because I found it.
Great escapist entertainment. Best movie.
But it's a different experience. It's like.
It's completely different.
Yeah. Anyhow, you want to know what a banshee is?
All right, give me a banshee.
A banshee is a female spirit in Irish folklore who heralds the death of a family member, usually by screaming, wailing, or shrieking.
All right. I don't see.
Wow. So you don't want a banshee. Oh, my God. If a banshee comes into your house, it is going to be screaming and wailing at you that there's about to be a death of a family member. Banshees.
Mr. Gleason's character falls into that. I'm only speaking out of ignorance. But, Avatar.
We should have a banshee on this show.
We should definitely. We should have banshee personas for at least one show. We'll drink, we'll become banshees.
Yeah,
but Avatar, big movie, entertaining, best picture, not in my view. I mean, I get why it's up there. And I think that judging from the diversity in all the films, that they're really trying to say, look, we're not being judgmental. We're not taking comedies out. We're not taking out action, adventure. Everything's a fantasy. Everything in the kitchen sink seems to be
nominated. The bottom line is, it's all about ratings for the Oscars now. I mean, I don't think the Oscars, the Academy Awards, was something that went on before television. The industry did it for the simple purpose of,
acknowledging the work that
right. But the Oscars are about ratings, so that's why they expanded the category to 10 pictures, because it started to become a little bit too narrow, the movies that were getting nominated.
Well, and I know we talk about this later, but and you brought it up, the fact that there's talk about consolidating actor and actress into one best actor, that category. The fact that after the Oscars, what are we talking about? Not the winners, but who got snubbed. Mm-hmm. I think we're off the rails completely now.
Yeah, we are.
And we're so concerned about the show as opposed to not the content of the films being nominated and the performers and the directors, but the style, the musical numbers, the comedy. We're so obsessed with that part of the show that I think it's lost its point.
Well, I'm not as, I mean, to me, I mean, I'll probably turn it on because,
who's going to host? I don't care.
Right. I know it's lost. Everything's lost its luster. Well, there's no luster anymore.
There's no more luster.
In any part of, that's why I always say to you, Gary, and I know you're obsessed with death, but, maybe it's a good thing.
You say that I'm obsessed with death. I always need to clarify. I live a happy life. I'm not morose. I'm not sullen. But I've always thought about death. I've always thought, oh, my God, that there's no getting off this train. It leaves the tracks and eternal nothing.
I think
this
I was a little
suffocating.
I was thought more about death when I was a kid than I do now.
Well, but here's my point. Yeah. What's the alternative to death? Not death. Well, that's a horrible thought. Imagine never being able to shut this off. That you go forever.
Really?
That's
So wait a second. You're scared of dying and scared of living? I don't want to die. I don't want to live.
There's three things that I tell myself when I have these horrible death thoughts, where I will wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh my God, I'm going to die. I think of three things. Everybody's going to die.
Right.
George Clooney didn't get a special ticket where he gets to live. Everybody's going to die. Everybody. So I'm in really good company. And I think about the fact that I really enjoy this life and the people that I know passing through this corridor of the universe at this time. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about the fact that, if you don't die, you live forever.
Mm-hmm.
That is a tiring thought.
Not really. I mean, you can nap. It's not like when you live forever, then you can't go to sleep at night.
Well, I think there has to be, God? Is it?
Wait a second. There have been a lot of stories of movies, and I find them fascinating. Of vampires who go back. They've lived for 1,000 years.
The life of a vampire is. I hate the thought of the life of a vampire, of never being able to die.
Really?
Huh. I guess I'm not making my point very clearly.
No, I get that. It's just that you see, at some point. I mean. I understand if you were aging and getting more and more decrepit, but if you were able to stay at a certain age and live forever,
I would be okay with reincarnation.
That. But if you were,
a long sleep and then come back, and I mean, I consider this. This is the other thing that I think about.
Mm-hmm.
It's if you line up all the things that had to happen for Kenny Seisler to exist throughout. The beginning of the universe. Mm-hmm. It's literally impossible. Mm-hmm. There's no way that all these things, and yet you are here. Our very existence is somewhat of a miracle. Well, therefore, could there not be another miracle in store? So maybe this is the end of this, but there could be 13 billion years from now, another collision of things that lead, because, your energy never dies, this...
No, it doesn't.
It's an infinite yet finite system.
Where do people come up with the energy? Your energy doesn't die. Who said that? That's not true.
I don't know. People smarter than me.
No,
you're energy. People dies. Who look through microscopes and they understand physics.
Your batteries go dead, energies die.
What do you say we go to our guest?
I've been waiting for you to say that for 20 minutes ago.
All right. Well, let's go to our guest. And I believe in the setup I introduce him. So, Kenny,
here we go.
Roll the tape.
All right.
Our guest today is Mark Ellington. He's in Los Angeles, I'm pretty sure. And Mark is a well-known director and producer and writer. Say hello, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
And I'm Mark. I know Mark from way back in the day.
Way back in the day.
We don't even want to talk about how many years it is. But Mark and I know each other from MTV, where Mark was a producer of many of the promos. And I remember the first time I think you came in, I was talking to you. Did you go to the University of Virginia? Did you go to school in Virginia?
I went to University of Virginia, yes. Yes, and then interned at MTV 1983.
Yeah.
When it was just one floor.
And Mark quickly became a star in the promo department. Then Mark quickly transitioned to, he got, because his promos were so exceptional, he got gigs directing music videos, some classic. He did the Jeremy video, which is an icon. Did you ever win a music video award?
I've got two of them, yes.
Oh, well, that's very
best
cool.
Director and best video. Yeah, I got a best director one and best video sitting in my office.
And then from that, music videos, then he went and became a big movie director.
A few movies, some TV shows, then documentaries, and then full circle, and then COVID hit, and now everybody reassesses their whole life.
Exactly. Let me just interject. I'm a huge fan of Mothman Prophecies.
Thanks.
I love so much of your work. I hope I can be heard here and seen. I've never done this with a cell phone before. How did the leap happen from videos into motion pictures? From your writing, did that turn into your directing?
No, I mean, after, you know, when you back in the day, music videos were highly, highly like respected, and they were very, very like kind of, you know, very well regarded. So if you had a very successful music video and something of that transcendent nature like Pearl Jam, you start to get the calls from Hollywood. Oh, hey, are you represented? What do you want to do? And even though I'd done poetry series and documentaries and stuff like that and had shot a lot of stuff, movies were the next logical step. So, you know, and I moved out here and spent more time out here, and it kind of just, you fall into it. Movies are the next step. So I made my first movie, which is called Going All the Way.
Right.
Based on a book, which I actually just got to this past year re-release the director's edit of that, completely new version of the movie, 25 years later to be able to make a better version of the film. And then Arlington Road came across my desk. I got lucky, was in the right place at the right time.
You know, you skip something that's very important here. The first time I saw Mark in the movies, I think it was at the Lincoln Towers Cinema, and I'm watching Jerry Maguire.
Yes.
I'm watching Jerry, and there's Mark Ellington in a scene with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I was friends with Cameron Crowe. Cameron was kind of a mentor. He was from Seattle. He knew Pearl Jam and all the Seattle bands that I had worked with, Alice in Chains, Screaming Trees, et cetera, et cetera. So Cameron became kind of a mentor. 94, 95, he was like, hey, I want to come by some of your commercials. I was doing some commercials with like football players and basketball players, right? That world of sports. So he didn't tell me. He calls me one day and he goes, meet me at the Formosa Cafe. And I meet him and he hands me the script. He goes, I made you a character in this script I'm making called Jerry Maguire. I said, what? He goes, yeah, I made this character who's like, this guy's a director and he's friends with this agent named Jerry Maguire. And I said, oh my God, that's great. 6 months later, he goes, I want you to come in and audition for the role. I'm like, I'm not an actor. He goes, no, I know, it's a persona piece. So I go audition and he's like, great. A month later, he goes, come out and audition with Cruise. I want to do a chemistry read with you and Tom Cruise for James Brooks. I'm like, you're kidding.
Right.
I got to Sony or Fox or whatever it is, and I go audition. And James Brooks laughs and loves me, and I'm huge and not huge. And I'm just like feverishly like, Jerry, you know, and there was a bachelor party scene that got cut. So I did it and I got the role. So I got that lot of scenes. I'm in the movie a lot. And then also had a small role in Almost Famous.
Wait, in Almost Famous you did?
I play a doorman that tells them to get back to the top of the ramp.
Oh, wow.
So I joked with Cameron that when he made Elizabethtown and I wasn't in it and the movie didn't do well, I was like, well, I was your rabbit's foot. So
absolutely, absolutely.
So, Mark, you know, does some of this moxie come from the fact that your father is Bill Pellington, the well-known tough Baltimore Colt?
No, I think it just was like Cameron is a friend and he goes, just be yourself. So in the movies, I'm just being myself. I'm not an actor.
You do bring up his dad, which I just want to talk briefly about because, and I didn't know he was a famous. What I know about his dad, I've seen the documentaries that Mark has done and my conversations with him. I want to ask you this. So Mark's dad was a very, very successful, was he a linebacker?
Yeah, linebacker. Well respected for a
very well respected. I saw on the internet he was called the meanest man in football.
Yeah, he had a badass reputation.
How was he as a father? Was he a badass father?
He was very, you respected him, but he was a nice guy.
But ultimately, he's after all of the work and stuff like that, he has what now we all acknowledge was CTE, right?
Yes. Yeah, he played 12 years and he owned a bar and restaurant for 25 years. And then he was retired and by the age of 60. Forgot, oh, hey, what's going on? When are you going? And like within a year, it was full blown dementia.
And that was, but did people acknowledge that it was a result of his football career back in those days?
This was before it became a big thing.
Yeah. People didn't even acknowledge it.
No, we didn't know it was CTE.
But when like within 10 years, seven or eight other guys on the 58 and 59 Colt championship team were all in the same wings at the dementia unit, it was pretty clear what was going on.
One more question on this, when I want to move to movies. You have a daughter, I know you have a daughter. But if you had a son, would you let him play football?
Good question. I wouldn't let him play in like fifth and sixth grade when I started. I might let him play in high school. And I think that every year that football gets safer and safer. I mean, I think it's becoming like flag football. And I think that the rules and legislations are going to get to the point where very soon tackling will almost be outlawed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe.
It'll be very minimized. Yet at the end of the day, so then if the odds go down to like, okay, a helmet-to-helmet hit. I don't know.
Right, man. It's hard to say. I wanted to have Mark on the show because we're in awards season with all the movies. I don't know how many you've seen, whatever. Did you just vote? I just voted for my guys. Who did you vote for in the DGA nominations in the movies? Do you remember?
I didn't vote. I don't vote for awards. I mean, I'm not a big. I like watching the movies. I like going to the movies, and I try to make movies and stuff. But I'm not a big like awards person. Like it's so hard to get a movie made. And so to get in a movie that was regarded but it's so overblown that from August to March, all people talk about are about 10 movies.
I know. But let's go right to the movies that got nominated.
Tar and Everything Everywhere All at Once. Everything Everywhere All at Once to me is like Spielberg and Robert Zemeckis meets TikTok. It's the first real 21st century movie. I think those guys were brilliant directors of videos, and I thought it was the most imaginative movie and the most risk-taking movie, yet also had a lot of heart, and it took a lot of genres together. And it's not for every generation, but boy, I thought it was very, very, very incredible.
Wow, okay. It won the Best Director prize, so
it doesn't surprise me.
What's that?
It won the Best Director prize at the DGA.
Right, which I was kind of curious. Is it fair? Is it fair to have two people as directors?
Sure, they're a team.
Same. So it doesn't make any difference.
Doesn't make any difference.
And the, and you're, and so that's your first. Now, what's your second favorite movie that you've seen?
Tar.
Really?
Todd wow. Field.
Gary, yeah. Have you seen any of these?
I've seen Tar. I like Tar very much. It made a lot of people too uncomfortable. I know lots of people who really don't like it. They don't like the characters, and therefore they assume that it's not a good film or it's not a good piece. Oh.
It wasn't for me, but that was because it's very esoteric. It's for a very, you know, thing. Okay. Now, let me ask you something. What about the Marvel movies and the Tom Cruise movies being included? Are those best pictures? Are they in the, I don't know.
I thought Top Gun was brilliantly directed, very entertaining, very well crafted, very well engineered. I mean, that thing was engineered on the script and production level to, you know, an inch of itself. I thought it was very entertaining. And there's nothing wrong with entertaining films and esoteric films. I mean, look, there's as my mother always used to say, that's why there's 31 flavors. You know, and anything that's many challenging movies have won Oscars before, and you can't please everybody. And I like to see a little bit of ambition and a little bit of drive. And, you know, it's that balance between populist and esoteric. You know what I mean?
But I do think there's been 10 awards.
You know, 10 nominees.
But I will say this. Yes, back in the day, that was probably true. But I think times have dramatically changed to the point where movies that were made years ago wouldn't be made today because so much, it's all driven by money. Which it's always has been that way, but more dramatically now. That I think that there are people, studios, which are giant corporations, are going to be doing more of the Top Guns and the Marvel movies and all of those things. And it's tough. The mid movies that you had done, Mothman Prophecies, do you think you...
Aren't made now.
No, aren't made now.
Well, don't you think... Well, I mean, Marvel movies aren't making money. I mean, they're making money, but they're not the box office smashers that...
You know what the number one movie this weekend right now...
Shelf life is over for them? What?
You know what the number one movie is, Gary? Ant-Man.
No. Yeah, but Ant-Man has been disappointing at the box office, hasn't it?
Not this week.
Okay. Well, but the Marvel universe.
The number one restaurant in America is
McDonald's.
Yeah, so like McDonald's is like shit. So is Ant-Man.
But it didn't put an end to other types of restaurants. It's popular entertainment, and I have nothing wrong. I have no complaint about popular entertainment, but I'm just saying sometimes there's a trade-off, and I think the trade-off is certain that people are not going to take or aren't going to do certain type of movies anymore because, you know,
as a filmmaker,
there's no movie theater. There's no independent movie theater to go to. You can't put a movie.
As a filmmaker, it's brutal. In 20, they don't make movies like that. There's no risk taking. Studios used to make this many. Now they make this many. It's all about money. It's fucking horrible. And like, so one movie like Tar gets through, like I can only lament as a filmmaker. Well, it's a little challenging. It's a little this. It's like, oh, everything's got to run through focus groups and algorithms and bullshit. It's all the deterioration of the culture based on the algorithmic financial sector. I'm sick of hearing about corporations and executives and who gives a fuck. People used to take risk. Paramount used to take risk on The Godfather. I made 4 movies for a company called Lakeshore that rolled the dice. They took risks. That's the balance. You'd sign this band, you'd release that movie, you'd put out that book. It's not that way anymore. Right. Everything's just programmed and numericized and quantified. And it's unfortunate, I think.
Where does the Fablemans fit into what you just said, that concept? Where does it
even
fit?
Even Spielberg's his own brand and filmmaker.
Okay.
That guy will always make movies and is one of the most highly respected filmmaker. But like, it's not even art in it. It's just they're cereal boxes, the Fableman cereal box, right? It's like for filmmakers and artists, like nobody gives a fuck about the Fablemans. We're struggling to make $1 million movies. Can I get
Avatar comes to mind?
They're all entitled actors, athletes, $50 million a year to play football, $35 million a year to play basketball, and then the All-Star games suck. It's just like, come on, it blows. right? These guys don't give a fuck. Money has ruined everything. Tell me what it hasn't ruined.
No, I completely agree.
And I'm doing my part.
It's also the internet has ruined everything.
It's absolutely, totally.
Yeah.
Well, Spielberg went up.
Spielberg
went up to Tom Cruise, and it was captured in a little piece of video where he said, "I think that Maverick it has just saved the industry," and I assume that what
his industry,
his industry going back to the movie theaters. I mean, Maverick did have some. The
very fact that one soundbite recorded at a luncheon becomes a mantra. Because Steven's like, who cares? People are dying in Turkey and Syria. Who gives a fuck about Steven Spielberg and Tom Cruise?
Well, sorry, the internet does.
People don't care.
Yes, they do. They're clicking on it all the time, Mark. Yeah, it's eyeballs.
I'm not.
No, you're not. You're not.
Do people really care? Is it really affect people's lives? Sending their kids.
Pop culture affects people's lives dramatically.
Oh, I disagree with you completely.
Oh, well, I think pop culture is where people spend their money, draw conclusions on life around them, draw conclusions on politics. I mean, movies were very, very political back in my day with Vietnam War. I mean, shaped a lot of stuff.
I think once upon a time we knew what pop culture was. There was a sense of, okay, this is where it fits. It's all mishmash. It's amorphous now. I don't, even when you say pop culture, Kenny, I'm not really sure
what all
fits into popular culture anymore.
Well, okay, I don't know that, but I do believe very strongly that when I was a kid growing up, a lot of my politics, my viewpoint on the world, came from watching, you know, movie Tom Cruise 4th of July movie, watching, you know, what was the John Voight movie?
Remember James this? Fonda. Coming Home. Right. Remember
Coming Home.
Seinfeld was a 28 share. There was consensus. Now everything's fragmented. There's no community or consensus, right? Everything has been with the rise of technology, politics becomes more polarized. The more extreme, the more it becomes ratings and likes, the more, that's the rise of Trump. The more the rhetoric goes to the right or the left, you have more division. So it becomes more division, there's less unity, less community, right? Less shared. There's no coffee, there's no water cooler shit anymore. It's all little niches upon niches upon niches. And that's what the technology did. The music business, the film business, TV, it just fragmented everything. So there's no shares. So advertisers now are like, let's put it all in the Super Bowl and put, because we get 115 million eyeballs. A rating share is now 0.4, when it used to be like, if you didn't get a 5, you get canceled across the board. Music.
So we got higher ratings on MTV.
Right. So Mark. What are you working on now?
I'm working on 5 different movies, trying to get chasing actors to get financing. That's my job. And then I'm doing 2 documentaries and trying to get in the commercial world, back in the commercial world, which has changed. But again, I'm 60. So I'm like, okay, if I could make, we're making a Mothman Prophecies TV show. If I could make a few more movies and one good TV show, I'll be good.
Yeah. By the way, TV show, you know, Mark, I think you did. I'm sure you did the pilot for a Blind Spot, right?
And Cold Case. Yeah.
And Cold Case. Yep. Is Blind Spot coming back? Is that?
That was.
I
that
read
was
that it wasn't.
5 years, 6 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. Excellent show. And Critics' Choice.
Yeah, I'm in the tail end of my career, right? So I'm like, I started in 1984, and next year's 2024. I'm releasing a book that Simon & Schuster is publishing called The Visualist, which is about making images and telling stories from music videos to commercials to TV to documentaries to movies. So it's like a little memoir, process memoir about what was it like to make things from analog.
Well, make sure you spell my name right, Mark.
Exactly.
Okay. Just make sure you get my.
I like giving back. I like to teach. You know, like again, I can't be 28 anymore. I can't be the culture's changed. So
Yeah.
You know, hopefully a little experience or a little thing, but like they want Ryan Coogler, right? They want a different, the culture wants something different. And until you get a success critically or commercially to give you access to the actors and that thing, you know, my last movies were small and they weren't like critical darlings. So it's harder.
Do you know who Hawk Koch is? Hawk was on our show.
Hawk's son is my lawyer.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. Anyhow, so we were asking Hawk about the awards. As a matter of fact, it's probably this time of the year, right before the Academy Awards, we had him on the show. And his thing was, what was most frustrating to him was, after the release of the nominations for all of these award shows, the next day, it's all about who got snubbed. Not who got nominated, but who got snubbed. Right?
That's the culture.
Yeah.
Which the culture of negativity. It's the culture of blame. Right? It's the culture of victimization. Who got snubbed? Oh, it was a racial thing that Andre Riseborough got. I mean, really?
And the thing about the DGA, you know, controversy this year, the DGA was no women were nominated for any of the DGA awards.
Well,
so that's...
Engineering categories, though, betrays the very concept of awards. I mean, it's supposed to be based on I'm preaching to the choir, based on the criteria of how you did as opposed to what you are.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Mark, another question.
People vote, right? That's what you're voting for. Isn't that democracy? But if if democracy itself is being questioned,
right,
how does that not go down to the voting
thing? Right, that's how it came out. Those are the nominees.
Another discussion they're having regarding the awards is taking gender out of the acting categories. You heard about that, Mark? So we won't have best actress or best.
I can't wait to move to a farm in Vermont and just.
Hey,
shut down this world.
You'll be my neighbor.
Gary's going to move to Massachusetts.
We're moving to Massachusetts, if not New Hampshire. And it's just to isolate. We're going off grid.
Okay, so I think about it. So we're all like, okay, so did people in 1978, right, bitch and say, oh my God, the 50s were so much better. Not the same way.
No,
not in the same way.
Not at all. Not.
We always look in the rearview mirror, and nostalgia always seems to be a positive thing. And we go, you know, people think that the 60s were better, but they brought us the Watts riots and the Vietnam War and the murder and assassinations of prominent figures. So they weren't better. But we tend to look at things in the past as being better. But to your point.
But people were optimistic. People were optimistic. My parents were optimistic.
Yeah, I think that
I was optimistic.
Things were getting better. Yes, and hey, I think
They came out with TV dinners. We thought that was like the advancement of society.
Well, and we had three stations to choose from if we had an antenna. Yeah. But I mean, I think what Mark was going to say is it's different now. Same nostalgia that we're
okay.
It feels like
movie theaters. Mark, when was the last time you went into a movie theater?
I go all the time. Last week.
Okay, what'd you see?
I saw, what was it called? Breaking, a movie called Breaking.
But you're nearby. Is that an independent? Would you go like to a Lemley theater?
AMC Sunset 5. But I go to Lemley all the time.
Oh, okay.
I go to movies all the time.
Right. But that's great that you have access to that. Out where I am in Calabasas, all I have are the multiplexes. There's no independent place to see any of these independent movies. There used to be a place, Fallbrook, but that closed down.
Right. Yeah, we just have multiplexes.
You'd have to go to Encino, to the Encino 5.
Yeah. Here in the Midwest, we don't even have afternoon shows anymore. First show is usually about 7:30. There's about one or two showings. So they don't have to pay any staff during the day because they weren't getting the crowds.
I just don't see how the movies are going to survive. People are
not around here.
Got big screen TVs. I mean, movies will survive. Content will survive. But the idea of going out. And by the way, Mark, when you went to the movie theater, and last time I went to a movie was out here, and I think I saw Avatar. And in the movie theater, there were a bunch of people, kids, and because I hadn't been to a movie in a long time, who were on their phones and they were talking. And I was the old man going, shh, shh. And it occurred to me, it's like, hey, you know, going out with people really sucks.
It's different. Yeah,
it's different. It's weird. And again, going back to the day, there wasn't a week that didn't go by that me and my buddies would just say, hey, let's go see a movie. Let's go see a movie. Let's go see a movie.
Of course. Well, yeah, shared experience is the deal.
But again, so when we would do that before phones and internets and also the technology has created the new reality, right? Mm-hmm. The technology has created the isolation and the fragmentation and the you have it on in the palm of your hand or at home or on your laptop, and I can be watching a movie and be texting with somebody and doing a Zoom thing with people and right. So that's the multi-screen aspect, split screens of our lives. And you can do it at home and order in your food. And that technology has now enabled that. So now it's like, yeah. Hey, I can use AI to do art and I never have to leave. And there's a real breakdown in community, breakdown in, I mean, look at the societal effects of it. You know, I mean, look at the mental health crisis. Kids 15 to 24. I mean, I live with it. It's like, it's fucking brutal.
It's brutal. Like, I'm so glad I think to myself.
Mental health of kids is fucked.
I'm so glad I'm not a teenager today to have to live with your phone.
It's hard.
It's fucked. I know.
Well, except that they don't know anything. I've got five kids. They don't know life any differently. So they have nothing.
I know that.
I will say this. My kids take their dates. They go on dates and not to the living room or the family room. They like to go to the movie theater. I mean, there is some energy still filling some seats.
But it's
that's a great day.
It is a brand new world.
It changes. No, you know, my daughter goes to college in Boston, right?
And, where?
Leslie University, which is right in Cambridge. And she's like, a couple of weeks ago, we've been going to this place and seeing bands, right? I'm like, that's awesome. So she goes in there every weekend. They go see different bands, and she meets kids from Berkeley and Tufts and stuff like that. So live music, a sense of community, right? And that's great. That, like, she never goes and sees bands here in L.A. Do you know what I mean? Right. But she's becoming independent. So I think people will always see live music and go to museums. And maybe movies are just going through this adjustment. But if you've only got four corporations that are controlling everything, certainly they're going to be like, well, we're making as much money as we can. And they might just say, we don't care about the theatrical experience, which they've said by releasing movies in theater and on screens. So people are like, everybody I know is like the same way. I'll wait till it comes on a screen. Right. So therefore, the world is saying, it's okay to watch movies on my TV.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Therefore, that changes the idea of sitting in the dark in theater and that community experience. Has now fallen apart and fallen away like other cultural institutions over time. And it's really, so it's an art form that's not even, that's barely 100 years old, right?
Right.
It's gone through its rise and deterioration.
Well, the thing about going to a movie,
are not the same as when they started.
Right. It was an event. You go to a darkened theater, sometimes the curtain opens, it's an event. It's exciting. It was an exciting shared experience, and it was immersive.
That's why
I can watch Avatar with my wife on the widescreen, but it's not exactly an event when we choose the time. And
so they'll become more like theater or opera, or they'll become a more rarefied event where the theaters are, the tickets are $25, and maybe there's smaller theaters. I show my movies. I did a little dance film, right? $7,000, a little distributor, Kino Lorber, puts it out. And there's a theater on Fairfax called The Brain Dead, right? They're a revival house, like Quentin Tarantino's theater. They'll show Barbarella and Showgirls, or they'll show my movie. In a few weeks, we're going to do an evening where I show some music videos and this film. It's a big screen. It's 200 seats, right? But they program and curate the evenings at this theater for people to come, right? So the days of like, let's get them in the mini mall and get big screens, that's deteriorated. So I think these more curated theaters, people still want to go to the movies, but like they have to have access to the movies.
Well, so, right, but that's I think you can get that in urban centers. You're going to get that in New York, Chicago, L.A.
What happened? I was just in a theater showing Going All the Way, my first movie, at a place called the Can-Can Theater in Indianapolis, right?
Well, that's great to hear.
300 seats, great food, great bar. People in cities and small they want to go to cool movies. They want to go. They want to read books. They want to go.
I think
got to be a place that can serve them.
Yeah, I don't think it's the death of movies, but it's certainly an adjustment for the whole thing.
These people make they make money hand over fist at this place in Indianapolis because it's not like the volume. They have to have three screenings. It's 200 seats. Like, so they know what their margin is, right?
Yeah. Let me just turn this to anecdotal. My son worked for Jack Giraldi, who I think you know, Mark. You know
Jack Giraldi?
Yeah, that my son worked for him.
Yeah. So, right, so I did a movie with Shirley MacLaine.
Exactly.
Jack
Jared knew Shirley MacLaine, and you did a movie with Shirley MacLaine. My son told this story, and I'd like to hear if you have any anecdotal information. So Shirley MacLaine had grown up being catered to. Every move she made, she always just, like, people would get her coffee or get her this or get her that, whatever. And she's very nice. But when my son would go with Jack to any kind of event, she really wasn't capable of doing anything around. So she would say things like, if she wanted to, she'd just say things like, hungry. She never said, like, get me a sandwich. She would just say, hungry. And Jared would have to drop, go and get her some food that she liked. Or she'd say, thirsty.
Horny.
Yeah, right, whatever. That's all the way she would operate. I'm sure she's a wonderful woman or whatever. I don't know, but I just wanted to tell, that was my son's experience with Shirley. How was it directing this icon for you, Mark?
She was great, and I never tasted any of that. She was difficult, as some big, you know, she was demanding.
Yeah.
She didn't suffer fools. She was great. I learned a lot from her.
Yeah.
And I'd say, hey, Shirley, you don't need to hit your mark. She goes, what are you talking about? I said, just we'll find you, don't worry. But she came from an old studio system, right? Rehearse, hit your mark, do the thing. I was like, we're gonna run three takes in a row. She goes, what do you mean? I said, we're gonna keep rolling, and then you're gonna, so you can kind of forget that you're acting. Now, she was amazing.
That's great.
But it was like, she was doing the movie with Amanda Seyfried, they were coming from different generations, and she had a different process. So I think it took her a little bit to adjust to kind of doing an indie film.
Yeah.
And, but she was great. Amazing woman.
That's amazing.
I mean, you work with a lot of people. I mean, you also, what was it? I Melt With You. That was you, right?
Jeremy Piven. And
yep.
Last movie, I made a movie for Quibi, the little app that did. But that movie's actually coming out in June. It's called Survive with Sophie Turner and Corey Hawkins. It's kind of a survival tale. And because that app just like it disappeared. Yeah. So nobody really got to see the work. And that's always unfortunate, you know.
Was the harshest conditions you ever had to do, or harshest conditions to make a movie under?
That was pretty harsh. That was at the top of the Dolomites in the snow and blizzards of, you know, on the Italian Alps.
When I watch these documentaries where they show mountain climbers up in these incredible places doing, the thing occurs to me is, yeah, those people are unbelievable. That's crazy. I can't believe what they're doing. But it also occurs to me, there's somebody who's schlepping that camera up the mountain. So not only, there's a whole crew of people who are also making the same climb.
It's very physically difficult. It's very physically difficult to do a action survival tale. It's very rewarding when it's done and use some visual effects to help. But yeah, I mean, and then when you see these shots and it's a drone shot and it's the stand-ins or the stunt people that are doing the work climbing up the thing, it's
probably more difficult than being in the actual disaster.
It's a lot of work and organization.
So if the film student says to you, what movies should I watch? Which movies should I want to be in a movie? What are the must see these movies that you would tell a young filmmaker that you should see? Take your time.
You ask 10 filmmakers, they'll give you 10 different answers.
No, I know.
You know, I mean, the films of Steven Spielberg are a pretty consummate, fantastic capturing of film grammar from wide to medium to storytelling, cinematic storytelling. He is pretty much, regardless of genre, kind of a consummate filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Different than Michael Mann, different than, you know, Kubrick, different than Francis Ford Coppola, different than Jane Campion or Catherine Bigelow or whoever, you know. Well,
Spielberg's range is unbelievable. He's done everything from E.T. to The Fablemans to West Side Story.
War of the Worlds to West Side Story, the range, to Private Ryan.
I've never seen a director as done so many different genres.
Probably the greatest filmmaker ever.
Right. So now, I would say, which I tell my son, I would say to this day still, Citizen Kane to me.
Yeah.
Apocalypse Now, I would say.
Godfather for me.
Godfather, absolutely. Kind of Godfather 1 or Godfather 2?
Both, but I actually, everybody loves to say Godfather 2 superior. Not for my money. Godfather 1 set the table. For me, that was a perfect film.
I like Godfather 7.
What was that one?
It's yet to be made. Hey, we're going to lose you because we have to be very respectful. Just, you gave us who you thought, who you like in the Academy Awards. What's your pick? Who do you? What's the odds-on favorite from your point of view to win Best Picture?
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Okay. I'm going to write that down.
Well, we'll come back.
Tar is too fringe.
Yeah.
Like, Top Gun is too populist. It's not going to win.
Avatar
too
James Cameron-y.
Is that even nominated?
Yeah.
Which 15, one?
Avatar.
17 out of the top 20 best DGA, best director. They win best. I think it'll win best picture. I think the Academy just sees it as the most, and it made a shitload of money, and it was the most populist.
And I'll tell you the other thing, diversity.
There you go. That's
checks all the boxes. Hey, Mark, we know you're busy. You got to go start doing one of those many things that you plan to do before you retire. So thanks for joining us today.
5 years to jam it in.
All right, buddy.
Well, that's where I am. I'm retired. Good. Hey, Mark, pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure. See you later. Thank you, guys. Thanks, man. Thank you.
Talk soon.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye.
That was interesting. I had never met Mark Pellington before. But I did know that he was the son of Bill Pellington.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, I didn't know of his dad until
Bill Pellington was known for the necktie tackle, which you can't do now. It's a high tackle. Like,
yeah.
He was known as the meanest guy in football.
That's why I was curious about how he was meanest guy in the house. Mark is very cerebral.
Prolific.
Very prolific. And when he came to MTV, actually, a lot of the MTV promos were all very funny. We did a lot of very funny promos.
And he did those.
No, he didn't do the funny stuff. He did the cerebral stuff. He started to do this, but it was great. It was very cool. And then he got into the Germany thing. But he's definitely, listen, we're all now sitting here going, you know, what's happening in the world? But it's changed, you know, for us. And now he's a...
Anyway, Kenneth, that was a lot of fun. I've enjoyed talking to you, as I always do. I want to thank our viewers and listeners for viewing or listening. You can find us on all the popular podcast platforms. We are on DBNA, streaming television, and we are on YouTube. And if you go to YouTube and you give us a thumbs up, that helps everybody. So thanks, everybody. And Kenny, I'll see you later.
You will, but I'm going to throw this in. Because I just got an email from somebody, Gmail address, the Gary and Kenny Show at gmail.com, and said, I can't believe people aren't discovering your show.
And they
love the show. They think it's so wonderful and funny.
People should be watching.
So the people who are watching now, thank you, and you should tell more people to watch.
Well, nice plug.
Good and plug. Goodbye.
So long, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.